Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app, or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Darkcast Network.
Where the light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Fruit Loops, episode 151. Bienvenidos, bitches, and Bwiti Binafi, and thank you all so much for listening.
Yeah.
Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and the victims that we don't hear or know much about. Contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are straight, cis, able-bodied white dudes.
What?
There. I'm telling you, there are many well-documented cases of serial killers of color, and Fruit Loops is a podcast all about them. We will take deep dives into the fascinating lives and crimes of serial killers and true crimes committed by people of color and the victims that the media and entertainment commonly leave out because the news is racist. Allegedly.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy, a Black Latinx woman, and I'm Beth, and I just happen to be white.
It's not our fault.
We're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists, just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions. Please send any questions or comments to fruitloopspod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 602-935-6294, and we may feature it on a future episode.
Also, our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all our social media. The footnotes for each episode can be found on our website. Plus, check it out for the different ways that you can support the show and become a Fruit Loops patron.
Yeah.
You can also support us by supporting our sponsors.
Yeah.
Check those out at our website as well.
Right.
So, are we talking about today, Beth?
Today we're talking about Kemi Adeola, a young English woman of African descent who killed an elderly woman and wrote a quote-unquote murder manual.
Wow. That's a new one for me.
Yeah. And so she's not actually a serial killer, but might have been had she not been caught. And This subject was suggested to us by Bethany Hawkins and researched and written by Minnie Williams.
Ah, yes. Well, hip-hop air horns to Bethany and to Minnie.
Yeah.
But before we get into it, how you doing?
Well, I had a kind of a shitty week, but...
No. You know. I'm sorry to hear that.
It's all right. You know, some weeks are like that.
You know what? I was thinking about you yesterday.
You were.
And as I was doing something, and I was like, I got to text her to remind you to take a day, just to take a day off.
Yeah.
Take a vacation day. I wanted to text it to you, but I forgot.
Yeah, I actually have a couple of scheduled vacation days for doing nothing. So
good.
Yeah.
Good. good. Take all of them. Take all of the time.
I need them. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, girl. And you deserve them.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. But thanks for being honest with us about, you know, what's really going on.
Yeah.
I'm in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And everybody calls it Hotlanta.
Right.
But to that I say Hotlanta my ass, because it has been so fucking cold here. It snowed the other day.
And yeah, so you texted me a photo of yourself in the office and you're all like bundled up in like,
oh,
I don't know,
God.
14 layers and scarves and hats.
I can't seem to get warm or stay warm. Today was a nice day, but I, you know, we went to it was maybe 70, but I just, my bones have not warmed up to Phoenix levels.
Yeah, of course.
And
not.
So I've been wearing like a coat and a beanie everywhere, even though it may not be totally warranted. My body has not caught up. And can it be hot yet, please?
It will please. Be. And then you'll be like, it's so fucking hot.
I've never uttered such a phrase in my entire life. Have I ever been like, oh, it's so hot. I can't. 37 years. Never. Not a once. even in Phoenix.
That's
like,
crazy.
People blast the AC when it's, you know, really,
yeah,
really cold,
true.
And it gets really cold indoors. And the only way to save myself, stay alive, is to go outside and warm up
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We have this running joke that old Whitey's trying to kill me. That's why he keeps the house so cold. But anyway, just waiting for the weather to get warm.
Yeah.
But that's it for that. Let's get into some listener letters.
All right. Thank you, angels.
Mm-hmm. Ah, what's in the bag, Beth?
Well, I wanted to say thank you to Too Fixed to Care for your case suggestion. We won't say what it is, just that it's now on the list.
Okay, hip hop air horns.
And we got a comment from Anne, who said, just wanted to say you should please, please, please put what you said in your latest podcast on a T-shirt regarding USA racist past and present. And the quote was, if you look in the mirror and your lipstick is smudged, fix it. Don't just close the mirror.
Merch alert. Yes, yeah. I love that idea.
And Sarita, a.k.a. the Melanated Alchemist, is working on a candle specifically for the pod.
We are so excited.
Yeah, she's a black candle maker, and she also makes body butters, melts, CBD candles, and room sprays. You can find her on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at The Melanated Alchemist, and her website is themelanatedalchemist.com.
That's right. She's also one of our Patreon supporters. So
yeah.
We are grateful for her in so many ways.
Yes.
But shout out to our sis, the Melanated Alchemist.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Well, and we also got a voicemail from Stacy.
Oh.
So I'm going to play it.
Okay.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Beth. And now Minnie. My once was two, but now three favorite podcast, the Fruit Loops. I listened to your Fruit Loops podcast, binged it in about 3 to 4 months. And now it's gotten to anticipation for Thursdays. I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and I know that Wendy has just moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and was thinking about going to some soul food cafes. Three that I know of is, one is the Peach Cobbler Cafe, Hattie Marie's, and also the Busy Bee's Cafe. Three restaurants I know you'll enjoy. I've lived here for 25 years. I am grateful to your podcast, because prior to living in Atlanta, I lived in the Bay Area, Berkeley to be exact, and I knew nothing of my history, black history, until I moved here. And I've gotten a huge enlightenment on history as it goes for BIPOC people, and also with your podcast has greatly, greatly enlightened me more. Not only that, but when you tell your stories, the regions, the countries, the cities that these crimes have happened in, you give the history. I love the history. Once again, my favorite podcast, Fruit Loops. Welcome to Atlanta. Hope you love it as much as I do. My name is Stacy. Have a great, wonderful day. My three new podcasts. Wendy, Beth, and Minnie.
That is so sweet. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I jotted down those restaurant names. So they are on the list.
Yeah, and check them out. So when I come visit, we can go to the best one.
You betcha. And we have Stacy to thank. So hip hop air horns for Stacy. So I started, we are recording a little bit different day of the week than we normally would. And this, when we would have recorded on Monday, we didn't have any Patreons, but then
God doesn't always
come when you want to, but he's always on time. And we got a new Patreon named Kirsten P.
All right.
So here is your tune, Miss Kirsten. Murder is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, but nothing, honey, if it ain't free. And feeling good was easy, Lord, when we sang the blues. You know, feeling good was good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Good enough for me and my Kirsten a pair.
That was fantastic.
Thank you. All right, so we are going to take a little break and get into the story when we come back. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy.
People don't always realize that physical symptoms like headaches, teeth grinding, and even digestive issues can be indicators of stress. And let's not forget about doom scrolling, sleeping too little, sleeping too much, undereating, and overeating.
Okay, so the copy here says to talk about my experience with stress. Oh boy, do you have an hour? Where do I begin? Work, bills, life, family. I could go
podcast.
On for a very, podcast, a very long time. And I actually do. Though in therapy, which is so helpful for me, so I can manage, deal, and get through it.
Stress shows up in all kinds of ways, and in a world that's telling you to do more, sleep less, and grind all the time, here's your reminder to take care of yourself, do less, and maybe try some therapy.
BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't wanna.
It's more affordable than in-person therapy. Give it a try and see if online therapy can help lower your stress.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp and Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color. Listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fruit.
That's BETTERHELP.com/fruit.
All right, guys, it's time for me to come clean. It's okay. It's time for me to tell the truth.
Right.
It's time for me to spill the beans.
Okay.
It's time to fess up. It's time to keep it a buck. Keep it 100.
Are you going to get to it?
Oh, yes. So sometimes after dark, I sneak away and play best fiends. Others may wonder about my mysterious disappearances. They say, who does she think she is? David Blaine? David Copperfield? I say none of the above. In fact, I'm having so much fun playing best fiends. Ever heard of it?
Why, yes, I have. I love Best Fiends. I love collecting the little monsters when you play so I can level up my fiends. Also, I love going in for the super long matches to free up the board and beat levels.
Ooh.
I am happy to report that I am on level 440.
That's amazing. Okay, friend, I see you flexing over there. Now, Best Fiends is a free-to-download mobile puzzle game with thousands of exciting new levels for new adventures and challenges every time you play. I'm on level 304. Beth, tell them about the offline play.
Yes, of course. There is offline play, so you don't even need Wi-Fi or the internet.
Oh, good. So download your new favorite getaway, Best Fiends, for free today on the App Store or Google Play.
You'll even get $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5.
That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. All right, we are back. Remind us, Beth, who is our subject today?
Today we're talking about Kemi Adeola, a teenage murder manual writer and murderer.
Yes, and murderer. Woo! So now we're going to get into some stats. So Kemi Adeola only had one victim, and that was Anne Mendel, who was an 84-year-old white woman of the Jewish faith. And I just made up this AKA Shitty McManuel for reasons we'll get into in the story. I mean, poop comes up quite a bit in this story. which isn't normal for true crime.
Yeah.
So unless you're listening to that ridiculous true crime podcast I shouted out last week.
Did you see what Seth posted in the Facebook group?
No, I didn't. Facebook was acting really weird for me today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was from How Not to Get Murdered.
Uh-huh.
If you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you.
Uh-huh.
And then don't poop on a plane with a diplomat.
A diplomat on it.
That was the How Not to Get Murdered.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love
thank
it.
You.
Oh, man, we got the best fans in the world.
Hip hop
air horns to our fans listening right now. So now we're going to get into the setting. Take us there, Beth.
Well, the setting is England in the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom, or the UK, is made up of England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. Great Britain is the official collective name of England, Scotland, and Wales and their associated islands. It does not include Northern Ireland and therefore should not be used interchangeably with the United Kingdom.
Whoa, that's a white culture corner
for all of us.
I had no idea. Wow, okay. Okay, thank you. But in any case, these areas have been continuously inhabited since about 8,000 years ago after the glaciers that used to cover the area melted. The history of the various peoples who have lived on these islands is complex, and sometimes it's hotly debated. Too complex to cover on a brief blurb of a podcast.
Yeah, but we're going to do the best we can.
We can. And you can always go to our sources or look it up yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Google
there you
is
go.
Free.
Suffice it to say, control of the region has changed hands many times. The Romans, the Anglo-Saxons, who were Germanic inhabitants of England, and the Vikings all tried their hands at ruling the area.
England has a generally high population density, with almost 80% of the population of the islands. Elsewhere in Great Britain and Ireland, high density of populations is limited to the areas around just a few large cities. The largest urban area by far is the Greater London Town urban area with 9 million inhabitants. Hello, Governor.
It was by the 11th century that London became the largest town in England. The area was ruled by a succession of various monarchs, continuing into modern times. It retains boundaries close to its medieval ones.
Since the 19th century, London Town has also referred to the metropolis around its core, historically split between the counties of Middlesex, Essex, Surrey, Kent, and Hertfordshire, which largely comprises Greater London, governed by the Greater London Authority. The city of Westminster, the dog show, to the west of the city of London, has for centuries held the national government and parliament.
London, as one of the world's global cities, exerts strong influence on its arts, commerce, education, entertainment, fashion, finance, healthcare, media, tourism, and communications. It is also the biggest urban economy in Europe, and it is one of the major financial centers in the world.
Wow, we see you, London.
Yeah.
So London's diverse cultures mean that over 300 languages are spoken.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing. The mid-2018 population of Greater London of about 9 million made it Europe's third most populous city, and it accounts for about 13% of the UK population.
The presence of Africans in England dates back to at least the Roman period, when African soldiers who served as part of the Roman army were stationed at Hadrian's Wall during the 2nd century AD. Septimus Severus, who sounds like he should be in a Harry Potter book.
Agree.
But he was an emperor who was born in Libya, spent his last 3 years in Britain before he died in York in 211 AD.
Hmm. The earliest known record of a black person living in London is of Cornelius of Blackamoor, whose burial was recorded in the parish register at St. Margaret's Church in Lee.
Due to the proliferation of documentation in the Tudor and Stuart periods, we know that Africans were present in most of the noble courts of this century. For example, Catherine of Aragon's most trusted lady-in-waiting, Catalina de Codornis, was Ethiopian and married to an African bowmaker named Oviedo.
African trumpeters served King Henry VII and Henry VIII Queen Elizabeth I also employed an African court dancer named Lucy Negro, who later became an infamous madam who ran a brothel in Clerkenwell, Northeast London.
Boom, chicka, bow, bow.
Yeah, wow. And entrepreneurship, and is considered one of the candidates to have been the inspiration of the Dark Lady of Shakespeare's sonnets.
Aside from presence within royal courts, African people were also embedded in all echelons of London society. Reasonable black men sounds very reasonable.
Yeah.
He was a silk weaver, and he lived in Southwark around 1579 to 1592. Seamstress Mary Phyllis, the daughter of a basket weaver from Morocco, came to London around 1583 or 4. Prince Dedari Jacoa, the son of King Kadibaya, who ruled a kingdom in modern Liberia, was baptized in London on New Year's Day in 1611 and lived as a merchant.
Around the 1750s, London became the home of many black people, Jewish, Irish people, Germans, and Huguenots. Leading black abolitionists of the period included Oluwadu Ekuanu, Ignatius Sancho, and Kuobna Otoba Kuguana. With the support of other Britons, these activists demanded that the slave trade and slavery be abolished. Supporters involved in this movement included workers and other emigrant nationals of the urban poor.
At this time, the slavery of white people was forbidden, of course, but the legal statuses of these practices were not clearly defined. Freed black slaves could not be enslaved, but black people who were brought as slaves to Britain were considered the property of their owners. Sounds very confusing.
Yeah, I was going to say. How about nobody be slaves? Yeah, then there's no confusion. Yeah.
During this era, Lord Mansfield declared that a slave who fled from his master could not be taken by force or sold abroad in the case of Somerset versus Stuart. This verdict fueled the numbers of black people that escaped slavery and helped send slavery into decline.
Yeah. England ended it a lot sooner than the United States did.
Yeah.
In this same period, many enslaved soldiers who fought on the side of the British in the American Revolutionary War arrived in London. Many of them became poverty-stricken and were reduced to begging on the streets. The black people in London lived among the white people in areas of Mile End, Stepney, Paddington, like the Bear, and St. Giles. The majority of these people became domestic servants to wealthy whites. Many became labeled as the black poor, quote unquote, defined as former low-wage soldiers, seafarers, and former plantation workers.
The slave trade was abolished completely in the British Empire by 1833. As a result, the number of black people in London steadily declined as fewer black people were brought into London from the West Indies and parts of Africa.
During the mid-19th century, there were restrictions on foreign immigration. In the later part of the 19th century, there was a buildup of small groups of black dockside communities in towns such as Canning Town, Liverpool, and Cardiff. This was a direct effect of new shipping links that were established with the Caribbean and West Africa.
Despite facing social prejudice, some 19th century black people living in England achieved exceptional success. Pablo Funk, born poor as William Darby in Norwich, rose to become the proprietor of one of Britain's most successful circuses during the Victorian era. He is immortalized in the lyrics of the Beatles song, Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite.
Oh, okay.
No idea.
Did not know that. Now, just after the end of World War II, the first groups of post-war Caribbean, and actually one of my Caribbean aunts explained that we are Carib, and so the proper way to pronounce it is Caribbean.
Caribbean.
Not Caribbean.
Oh, okay.
Not Caribbean.
Caribbean.
Caribbean queen, and it's sharing the same thing.
Anyway, so the first groups of post-war Caribbean immigrants started to emigrate and settle in London. There were an estimated 492 that were passengers on the HMT Empire Windrush that arrived on Tilbury Docks on June 22, 1948. These passengers settled in the area of Brixton, which is now a prominently black district in Britain.
From the 1950s into the 1960s, there was a mass migration of workers from all over the English-speaking Caribbean. Caribbean. Particularly Jamaica, who settled in the UK. These immigrants were invited to fill labor requirements in London's hospitals, transportation venues, and railway development.
But they were treated like shit.
Yeah.
They had a really difficult time. We see you, England. don't think you're getting off scot-free on this racism charge I've got for you. So there was a continuous influx of African students, sportsmen, and businessmen mixed within British society. They were widely viewed as having been a major contributing factor to the rebuilding of the post-war urban London economy.
In 1962, the Commonwealth Immigrants Act was passed by the government along with a succession of other laws in 1968, 1971, and 1981 that severely restricted the entry of Black Caribbean immigrants into the United Kingdom. In 1975, a new voice emerged for the Black population of London. A member of the House of Lords, his name was David Pitt. He was Black, and he spoke against racism and for equality in regards to all residents of Britain.
Nice. Yeah. At the 1987 general election, the first ever Black British MPs were elected to the House of Commons. Diane Abbott for Hackney North and Stoke Newington, Bernie Grant for Tottenham, and Paul Boateng for Brent South. All were candidates from the Labour Party, and out of these three people, Abbott was the first Black British woman to be elected to the House of Commons.
Wow.
Okay. Yep. Hit my bear horns.
By the end of the 20th century, an increasing number of Black Londoners were British-born. Even with this growing population and the first Black people elected to the UK Parliament, there is still discrimination and socioeconomic imbalance in London among the Black community.
Yep. According to the Office for National Statistics, based on 2011 census estimates, approximately 60% of the inhabitants of London were white, 26% were of Asian and mixed Asian heritage, 7% were Indians, followed by Pakistanis and Bangladeshis at 3% each, and Arabs for 1%. 16% of London's population were of Black and mixed Black descent.
Okay.
So now we're going to get into Shitty McManuel, a.k.a. Kemi Adeyula's early life. What do you got, Beth?
Well, Kemi Adeyula, a Black woman, was born in 1987 in England. Both of her parents are Black from the African diaspora. The marriage of her father, Bola Adeyula, who came to London from Nigeria as a child, and Kemi's Barbados-born mother, Mercuria, lasted barely 4 years.
I was going to say, what makes this worse is she's a millennial.
millennials.
Yeah, those damn millennials. So the back to Kemi, the couple produced three children, and Mercuria had a fourth child from another relationship as well. So Kemi has three siblings. Kemi lived with her mother and siblings in the East Midlands and the Southwest for a time.
Her father was a property manager and former boxer who is worth an estimated 10 million pounds, which is equal to approximately 14 million American dollars. In 2006.
That's more than I got.
Yeah, that's way like more than I got. He had little contact with his children during their upbringing. He said he lost contact with Kemi when she was 11. After that, he said, he passed money and messages to her through her grandparents.
Despite suggestions that Mercuria received an alleged £4 million or $6 million US dollar divorce settlement, she and her children seemed to lead a life without purpose or direction, moving to a succession of homes in places including Cheltenham and Peterborough, frequently alienating neighbors and sometimes being evicted for non-payment of rent. At one property in Gloucestershire, Kemi reportedly killed the goldfish in a neighbor's pond and blamed a cat.
God. Wow.
Serial killer sign. Yeah. Check that box on your bingo card.
Kemi was briefly boarded at Wycliffe College for £23,000 a year, approximately $32,000 US. The independent school at Stonehouse in the Cotswolds prides itself on academic and sporting achievements, but Kemi only lasted a few months because of a dispute over who was paying her fees. Her mother apparently no longer had the money to foot the bill, and her father refused to pay. But her teachers described her as disruptive, so the school was probably glad to see the back of her anyway.
Oh, well, that's a term that they often label Black girls as disruptive. When they are not really being disruptive, they are maybe being bothered and they're sticking up for themselves or anything that they do because it's coming out of a Black body.
Right.
To the white establishment might appear to be disruptive. So yeah. I don't don't know if I buy that. But anyway, in February 2002, Kemi moved with her mother and sisters to the neighborhood of Elmcroft Crescent in Golders Green, a borough of London located in the northwest of the city. It's a smaller suburban area in Greater London near a farm and public grazing green of medieval origins. It is known for its large Jewish population as well as for being home to the largest Jewish kosher hub in the UK, which attracts many Jewish tourists.
In Golders Green, Kemi and her family lived next door to an older married couple, Leonard and Anne Mandel. One day when Kemi had accidentally been locked out of her house, Anne let the teenager into the Mandels' home to wait until someone came home.
Just the utmost kind. That's a really kind gesture to let a kid you don't know
into
just
your house.
Kind of wait for their parents. Yeah. And my understanding is the Mandels are white, right?
Yes.
White and Jewish.
Yep.
And so for them to not be like, ooh, no, a black person in my,
house,
but to just let treat her like a human being, you know, that was really kind. And it's a shame what happens next.
So
Anne must have had a very kind heart because other neighbors in Golders Green have said that Kemi subjected the neighborhood to quote unquote reign of terror and racial harassment, abusing young children and smearing excrement on windows.
Whoa.
What? Where did she get it from? Herself? Her own butt?
I don't know.
There's so much poop in my life lately, and this story is just
adding more.
Why? She was even arrested for abusing one Asian neighbor. And I wanted to say, people might be like, how could a black person be responsible for racial terror? But sometimes, welcome to Culture Corner, sometimes white supremacy function and succeeds by pitting communities of color against each other.
Right.
This sounds like it was a young girl who was just a menace.
Yeah.
But black versus Asian, immigrant versus other immigrant communities, those are weapons of white supremacy. So.
Gotcha. A resident who did not want to be identified said that Kemi focused a lot of negative attention on one particular family. Once she lay in wait behind a bush for an East Asian man and then punched him in the face, breaking his nose. Yeah. And she called his wife a packy lover. Packy is a derogatory term used in the UK for a person of Pakistani descent.
Wow.
And it was said that she tried to poison his dog as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we've said this before. Being a BIPOC person doesn't absolve you of racism. I think anybody is capable of
racism.
Of racism. But the thing is that when we're talking about true racism, like who has the power to hurt somebody else is usually not a BIPOC person.
Yeah. Usually not. Yeah.
Usually not. But this is just so fucked
up.
I don't even have words. So another neighbor said that Kemi was a quote terrible menace unquote and would walk around nude shouting and swearing at anyone who dared to try to stop her. The neighbor also said that the family would play music and scream at all hours. Well, I mean, if it's lit, it's lit, right? But the walking around nude, come on.
Other neighbors recall that her father sometimes turned up in his Rolls Royce to see the children.
Wow.
But the visits were brief and infrequent. And the family moved away from Golders Green in July of 2003 after 17 months.
Wow. You know what is also interesting is how much the neighbors know about these other people.
Yeah.
There's a meme you showed me once. Black people will never be lonely because white people are always up in their business. And I was just thinking, I don't know any of my neighbors and I don't need to. And I'm not at, like, looking through my windows.
No,
like if
I don't
the police
care.
Came.
I don't care what other people are doing. They're minding their business. I'm minding mine. I don't give
minding
a shit.
Minding your business is free.
Yeah.
But these neighbors, it doesn't seem like they did that.
Well,
anyway,
it sounds like there was some fucked up bullshit going on.
You know what?
On.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. You're right. I take that back. Stand corrected. Get ready for your starring role in a thrilling adventure full of hidden clues, immersive scenes, danger, and romance.
That's right. It's June's Journey, and you play June Parker, an amateur detective investigating a series of mysteries.
Ooh, you'll put your powers of observation to the test, sharpen your sleuthing skills, find objects, and claim rewards.
The visuals are fire. It's like a party for your eyeballs. Wow. As you play this thrilling adventure full of hidden clues, immersive scenes with danger and romance in full force.
Whether you're craving a good mystery or just need to get away for a while, June's Journey is the perfect game for you.
It really is a sweet escape. I like to play when I need a mental pick-me-up.
There is a detective in all of us. Find your inner detective. Download June's Journey free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right, so let's talk about batteries, specifically social batteries.
Okay.
Now, during the winter, you know, like my battery was like really drained and I really just couldn't wait for it to be over. And now that winter is gone, I am feeling more energized socially. So
nice.
I can manage having friends over at my house and going out to do things. But I have to do a lot of mental preparing.
Yeah.
And then I also have to have time to recover from the people and the things.
Oh, yeah. I get that. And I know there are people out there who are energized and even thrive on being around people.
Yeah.
But I am definitely not one of those people.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. The thing is, you know, sometimes our batteries can get drained when we say yes to all the things and to all the people. And we forget to, you know, set boundaries and set aside time and space for ourselves.
Everyone's different.
Right.
And the good news is that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I definitely had many sessions with my therapist about boundaries and positive coping skills. And therapy is, dare I say, empowering.
Yeah.
And it can help you become the bestest version of yourself and can help you determine when your battery is beyond depleted or needs a refresher.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/fruit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's better, HELP.com/fruit.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I could no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get 6,000 cash, give us each 3,000, we give you this.
Uh-huh.
You go home, and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com. or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Ohio is a land of mystery. From missing shipwrecks and lost treasure beneath her surface to strange phenomena slicing through her skies. From myths that have evolved around historic events and people to the unsolved murders and disappearances that keep her communities wondering what happened. Find Ohio Mysteries on your favorite podcast app and let's explore the inexplicable. OhioMysteries.com.
So now we're going to get into the timeline, and Minnie has some something juicy to
yes.
tell us. So let me begin with, I fucking hate this bitch. She is shitty Bellamy level shitty. Sorry, not sorry. Signed, Minnie. And Minnie, we agree. So Adeyula didn't seem interested in school, and by the age of 15, had fallen into criminal habits, shoplifting various items from stores or paying for one and stealing two, then bringing them back later for a cash refund. She later bragged about it, saying, quote, "It's a skill," unquote. Woo! I've not seen that on LinkedIn.
She said that she was an expert at altering receipts to get refunds for stolen goods, speaking with an upper-class accent that she'd learned at school. I guess maybe she was paying attention in school after all.
Wait a minute.
She also boasted to a sibling about her acting talents.
Acting as what? Trouble? So she described how when being questioned by a youth worker, she'd wept, mumbled, and arched her back to convince the woman of her innocence and vulnerability to try to limit her sentence. She wrote in her journal, quote, "It worked such a treat, I could tell she was touched. I felt she sensed my anguish," unquote. And to that I say, no, bitch, we see you, and not in a good way. And I will also say that I remember being a child and seeing young white girls get hurt or get into trouble.
Right.
And they would cry and then they would get out of it.
Yeah.
So my black ass, when I tried it, it didn't work. Nobody helped me. I remained injured and in trouble. So hats off to you, Kemi, at least on that one.
At least you tried.
At least you tried.
But after a string of convictions, she found herself facing jail time rather than just community service. She ended up with a 3-month sentence at Bulwood Hall Young Offenders Institute in Essex, a county in southeast England between London and the North Sea.
Bulwood Hall was built in the 1960s, originally as a female youth detention center. Over time, the prison also began to hold female adult prisoners. In 2002, Bulwood Hall was featured in a series of 6 30-minute documentaries titled The Real Bad Girls.
Mm. Although the series portrayed the prison in a positive light, a 2005 report condemned Bulwood Hall for still using the practice of slopping out, which is gross.
Oh, getting more poop.
Yeah. Manually emptying human waste from prison cells that are unlocked in the morning. Gross.
Wow.
It had been built without flushing toilets in the cells. A year later, the prison was singled out for its high levels of attempted suicides and self-harm among the inmates. And that's horrible.
Those conditions sound entirely inhumane.
Yes.
Do better.
Yes.
So Bulwood Hall continued to serve as a women's prison until 2006, when it was announced it would be converted into a Category C male prison. They were still going to use this place?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No toilets? Due to a shortage of male prisons. It has since been shut down.
Well that's good news. God. Anyway.
Yeah.
In any case, it was there at Bulwood Hall that Kimmy's thoughts turned to murder. Living in a fantasy world, she imagined murder would be the answer to all of her troubles, of course.
Interesting train of thought.
And during a routine cell search in October of 2004, staff found an 18-page handwritten document, which was later referred to as a, quote, blueprint for murder, unquote.
Oh,
it's okay. Been reported that the document was titled either Prison and After Making Life Count, or alternatively Prison and After Making Life Again. And I don't know which one it is, but one of those.
Well, that's just a murder manual.
Either way,
it included a shopping list of knives, guns, drugs, and handcuffs, and plans to kill, dismember, and dispose of a victim. Her goal was to get her hands on £3 million. That's about $4.2 million. She imagined stalking an elderly woman in a wealthy area, possibly posing as a schoolgirl, conducting a survey for homework.
She wrote, quote, "Run lightly and silently behind her and cover her mouth with a gloved hand. Make her so scared she cooperates. Keep calm, composed, and silent. She must cooperate or take a knife to her throat. Tell her, this is your only warning," unquote. Mm. Oh, Adeola, you creepy fuck.
Yeah.
When confronted by prison staff, Adeola insisted her notes were part of a draft for a novel.
I mean, couldn't it, I think that's a fair argument, because I was just gonna say, is anybody interrogating Stephen King for the fucked up shit?
I don't think it sounded like a novel, though.
Yeah, it really does sound like a list of plans, a to-do list.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So a psychiatric assessment of her at the time described her as, quote, "a highly intelligent and sophisticated young person who with good support should make a good recovery and engage in her A-level studies," unquote. An A-level levels are like advanced placement courses, AP courses taken in the UA to get it, or in the UK to get into university.
Right.
But it went on further to say that there was no indication that Adeola, quote, would be predisposed in any way to this type of violence, nor was there any evidence of this type of violence in her past, unquote.
Despite the discovery of the blueprint for murder, psychologists at Bulwood Hall had held high hopes for Adeola on her release, describing her as an articulate, intelligent, and sophisticated girl. A prison psychiatrist who believed Adeola's lies that she had achieved 4 GCSE A grades said it was a shame that she had been jailed.
Adeola was released a month after her murder manual was found, in November 2004. She then moved into a Hampstead flat with another teenager, reportedly her younger sister, Sade. She later claimed that she paid the rent by working as a 500-pound or $700 escort. She claimed, quote, "It is completely legitimate and professional business. We earned up to £5,000 or $7,000 a week," unquote. But okay. I mean, sex work is legitimate work.
Yes, yes.
Right? It's it is a job. It is a vocation.
It is. I don't think Minnie thinks she was being an escort.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Got you.
Her father later said, quote, "That's all rubbish. 5,000? No one would give 5p for them," unquote. Wow. So this is his two daughters he's talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's 5p?
5 pence. It's like 5 cents, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I know. And that's his father saying about his daughters. Yeah.
Okay.
He said that following his daughter's release from Bulwood Hall Prison, he had set her up in a flat and given her a 140-pound or $200 a week job and advised her to go straight. After 3 months, he wanted the two girls to start paying the rent. The teenagers reacted badly, just abandoning the flat, and as a further affront, they vandalized his office.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, wow, that is, whew. So a council monitoring team that had been set up to supervise her for 3 months after her release decided that Adeola did not pose a risk, and she was released from supervision. A month after her supervision expired, now living in Camden, North London, she decided it was go time. And in March of 2005, Adeola turned her novel into a reality.
On the morning of March 14th, 2005, Leonard Mandel, a retired postal worker, was getting ready to go out to purchase airline tickets to travel to Israel. His wife, Anne, had finally decided on the trip so that they could go see their daughter and their daughter's husband. Anne hadn't been feeling well that morning, though, so Leonard went on his own to get the tickets at about 9:45 a.m. while Anne stayed home in her pajamas.
Couldn't you buy plane tickets online
in
2005?
These were older people. He probably didn't feel comfortable doing that.
Understood. Thanks, OG. So in the hour that it took 81-year-old Leonard Mendel to pick up the tickets for the trip, Adeola entered the home of the elderly Jewish couple, cut the hall phone wires, then attacked Ann Mendel, inflicting deep wounds to Ann Mendel's torso, right arm, and back with a blade at least 1 inch wide and 5 inches long. Adeola was 17 years old when she stabbed 84-year-old Ann 14 times at her home in Golders Green, Northwest London.
Leonard came home to find Anne in the hallway, lying under a pile of clothes, unresponsive. He tried to give her mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, not realizing yet that she'd been stabbed. He had not yet noticed that the hall phone wires had been cut and that blood was on the walls, as he was so focused on the sight of his wife, appearing to him to be simply unconscious, as the clothing covering her body hid her blood-soaked pajamas and pink dressing gown.
He tried to call emergency services from the hall, but found the phone was not working, so he went to the kitchen to call from there instead. It only took minutes for paramedics to arrive, but Anne had already died from the 14 stab wounds in her chest and back.
Seemingly, the only reason that Adeola had selected Anne as her first target was that they had shared a brief spell as neighbors in a North London suburb. As you recall, Anne was the one who had let Adeola into her house when she'd locked herself out at that time a couple of years before.
Yeah, She showed her kindness, and
this is
how you repay her.
Yeah.
Gray-haired great-grandmother Anne, 98 pounds and barely 4 foot 10 inches tall, had devoted her life to her family, charity, and community. Despite her 84 years and increasing frailty, she would, according to friends, quote, travel miles to help people, unquote. The elderly couple had been married for 50 years and lived a quiet life. They had 2 children, 14 grandchildren, and great-grandchildren.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Their son, Yitzhak, appealing for help after the murder, said, quote, my mother spent every day of her week performing good deeds and charity work. She devoted her whole life to visiting the sick, helping friends and neighbors, and bringing a smile to everyone she knew, even complete strangers, unquote. Mm.
In early years, Anne had worked as a hospital secretary and joined the army during the Second World War to help track German bombers blitzing the East End of London where the couple lived. Her death was a great loss to her family and her community.
Leonard later said that he remembered the Adeyula family living next door to them in Golders Green sometime back, and that just prior to Anne's murder, he had suspected that someone had been sneaking into their house. One time, he'd found Anne's clothes scattered all over the floor in the bedroom, but he hadn't called the police because he wasn't sure what to say.
That would definitely be an odd thing to report.
Right.
And would the police respond, especially with an older couple? Would they just dismiss it as some sort of Alzheimer's or dementia thing?
Yeah.
What do you think you would do if you came home and found your clothes scattered on the floor? Yeah. Would you call the police or would you, Minnie says, or would you run high-pitched shrieking through the streets, waving your hands in the air like she would do? Minnie says, would I do that? You know, I don't know for sure. I have another funny story for you. So, you know how in cartoons and shows, if there's a mouse, people are always shown to be jumping on chairs and shrieking out of fear of that mouse. And she always thought that was ridiculous. These people are exaggerating. Who would actually do that? And so Minnie says, let me tell you, a mouse got into our house one time and I did not know what the F to do. As I was trying to figure out what to do, the mouse actually started turning toward me. And wouldn't you know it? I shrieked like a little girl and jumped up on the closest thing to me, which happened to be a toilet lid closed, of course. I continued to shriek and jump. What the actual fuck? What kind of an adaptation is that? The thing is tiny, but all I can say is I had a gut fear of it running up my pants leg and biting me, LOL. So moral of the story is you think you know what you might do, but you don't really.
Yeah.
And then Beth, she says, do you want to tell the story of the time that you thought a murderer had come into your house, but it turned out it was actually your mom? Remember?
Yeah. So Minnie and I were watching TV at home. Our parents had gone out to dinner and we heard somebody come in the house and go upstairs. And we freaked out. We were like, what the fuck is that? So instead of going to see who it was,
oh God,
we grabbed a knife and ran out the back door. We ran to a neighbor's house and we were like, oh my God, somebody's in our house. And so,
are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. So the neighbor was like, oh, let me check it out. I'm like, oh, maybe we should call the police. And he's like, oh, I'll just go check it out. And so he went upstairs and it was my mom. She had to go to the bathroom really bad and my dad had dropped her off and gone to the store. That's what was freaking us out. It's like if it was had been both of them, then, you know, we probably would have known. But it was just somebody came in the house and went up the stairs.
Wow. Oh, my God. I love that story.
So,
by the way, was this before or after you read Helter Skelter?
Probably after. Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
Makes sense why you were on alert. So now we're going to get into the investigation and the arrest. Hit it, Beth.
Adeyula's DNA was found on Anne's hand, and 2 months after Anne's murder, police had enough evidence to arrest Adeyula for the crime. Adeyula tried to explain that the DNA had been found by saying she had, by chance, helped the elderly woman across the road earlier that day, because she's so nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, wow, this man, she is a real piece of work. With assistance of her sister, 16-year-old Sade Adeyula, she then tried to construct an alibi. Adeyula said that on the morning that Anne Mandel was murdered, she was in West London trying to get back a purse she'd left on a bus.
She tried to get Sade to get a false receipt and be a witness because, quote, I didn't think it was right I should spend 25 years of my life in prison for something I didn't do, unquote. Okay.
Oh, right. She's really sticking to this
she is.
Story. So police believe that Anne's murder may have been a dry run for a wealthier target and that more victims may have been in the pipeline. Detective Sergeant Paul Belsham said, quote, "If she had got away with this, then God knows what she might have done. She is very, very dangerous," unquote.
Yeah.
So now we're going to get into the trial. It's trial time. What do you got, Beth?
Well, not surprisingly, Adeola pleaded not guilty to the charge of murder. During her trial in June of 2006, Adeola, who was 18 by this time, reportedly appeared unmoved by the gravity of her crime. Dressed in a pinstripe suit, pink trainers, and a spangly belt.
Wow.
She smiled and exchanged text messages during court recesses.
So she was in court, as we might say, giving Luke's, but not the place to be giving. You know what I'm saying?
No.
So her murder blueprint was presented as evidence at the trial. The prosecution said Adeola had chosen Mrs. Mendel as a soft target on which to practice before finding a rich, elderly, and defenseless woman to kill for money.
The document began innocently with plans to lose weight, find an apartment, establish bank accounts, make money to furnish her apartment, buy a Mercedes, of course.
Of course.
Clothes and DVDs. Adeola wanted to obtain a fake GCSE, similar to a high school diploma in the U.S., and A-level qualifications over the internet, and mock up a CV stating that she had attended the Chelmsford School for Girls.
And then do what?
Yeah, I don't know.
But her
and then
primary
go kill people.
I guess. But her...
you have to go to the Chelmsford School for Girls to become a serial killer.
I guess. You know what it reminds me of? Though, even though this is real life and Parasite is a movie,
right?
But that young man who faked these qualifications to gain access to these really wealthy people.
Yeah.
But her primary requirement for a quote happy future unquote was getting her hands on at least £3 million. Mm-mm, me too. For this, she would need to rob and murder an elderly woman and frame the woman's husband for the killing. This would require equipment. Listed were petrol canisters, plastic bags, cling film, semi-automatic guns, taser stun guns, a bulletproof vest, and various disguises, wigs, dark glasses, and a full-body fat suit.
What?
What do you even get with those?
I don't know. She also described her ideal victim, quote, "She must be wealthy, quite elderly, and defenseless. Find a candidate and watch her. Their routine must be closely observed. Follow her. She will probably be married. See if they get any visitors. Create a survey questionnaire and visit them disguised as an A-level student. Tell them it's field work. Ask them, do you have guns to protect yourself?" Unquote.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she imagined. She really has thought of everything. She imagined the attack as well, quote, "Lie in wait for the victim, creep up on her, and cover her mouth with a gloved hand. Once in the house, threaten the victim with a knife, extract bank account details and the code to her safe. Get her to write a fake I'm leaving note and then dispatch her," unquote. Man, she is a serious piece of work.
She is.
Wow.
She also thought of how to dispose of the body. Quote,
"Oh,
with your butcher's knife, remove her head. Wrap it in film to contain bleeding, detached limbs one by one. When you have completed the task, put head and body pieces in black bag," unquote. An alternative plan was to drive the victim to the top of a cliff, slit her throat, set fire to the car, and send it over the edge.
Wow.
That's a lot, man.
That is a lot of work. There's so many other things you can do to get money.
The job was to be done by February 2005. Good Lord, is anyone else tired of listening to this bitch? As Ariana Grande might say, shut your mouth.
Yeah, seriously. Zip it. So during testimony, it was described how Adeola had been questioned by prison authorities who were concerned after finding her notes in her cell at Bulwark Hall in October 2004. Forensic psychologist Lydia Sear said, quote, "There was concern what was behind it. She would not explain herself. She was defensive, arrogant, and assertive. She was asked, 'Is this something you're going to do?' She said, 'I want it back. It's a story. I asked whether she had considered what the intention was before writing the book. She refused to answer, and she left the room, unquote.
A psychiatric report carried out after the discovery of the document said there was nothing to suggest she was capable of such violence. A spokesman for Barnett Youth Offending Team said, quote, "The psychiatric report did not predict any likely occurrence of this. Once her supervision was completed, there was no mechanism for stopping her reoffending," unquote.
That is a shame. During her testimony, Adeola said that she had set up house with another girl in Belsize Park, North London, and worked as an escort to pay the rent. Quote, "All we had to do was go out on a date and we could make £500, $700 a night. We could make up to £5,000 or $700 a week. It was safe because we shadowed each other and it was easy," unquote.
Police described finding a cache of sex toys when Adeola's flat was raided after she was arrested. Quote, "There were several vibrators, nipple clamps, lesbian pornographic magazines, edible underwear made of candy, revealing outfits, handcuffs, all sorts of equipment," unquote. Police also discovered piles of stolen designer clothes and a book entitled Great Crimes.
Oh, the fact that the police found all these sex toys and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just another element of stories about Black women or women of color
and how
who commit crimes. You got to add the sex element.
They're
sex crazy.
That's what I thought. Like, why are they even talking about this? You know?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the crime.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, cool. You do you. No kink shaming here. But I seriously do not believe you about the whole paid escort thing, girl. You are made up of lies, 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 period.
Yeah.
You are a founding member of lies.com.net.org.uk. Not buying what you're selling, not picking up what you're putting down. You are a longtime resident of lying ass bitch town population.
Wow, I love this.
Pants on fire, girl. Pants on fire.
Okay. Kemi Adeola has just been red. Okay. Wow. Red for filth. Woo. I love this.
Her pants are on fire.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We don't need no water. Let the motherfucker burn. Burn, motherfucker. Burn.
I like that. Man, oh, my God. That was so beautiful. So anyway, back to the trial. As she had done before when she was first confronted about her writings, in court, Adeola again claimed that the 18-page handwritten murder manual was the draft of a crime thriller novel. She dismissed the manual as, quote, "the scribblings of a 16-year-old girl," unquote. Ooh, because you're so mature now.
She said it was a work of fiction inspired by her fascination for crime writers James Patterson and Martina Cole. She told the court, quote, "I had always considered writing a book. I'd like to be an author. When I was in Bullwood Hall, I thought it would be a good place to start," unquote.
Okay. Henry Blaxland, QC, defending, said, quote, "The court has before it somebody who is, on the face of it, emotionally damaged. She finds herself utterly alone in the world, given that her family have entirely washed their hands of her," unquote.
But on June 27, 2006, the jury found Adeola guilty of murdering Anne Mandel at her home in Golders Green in Northwest London. She and her sister, Sade, who believed that her older sister was innocent of the murder, were also convicted of one count each of perverting the course of justice.
Speaking after the verdict, Detective Inspector Steve Morris of the Metropolitan Police described the case as, quote, "a wicked, premeditated murder committed by a callous, devious young woman and her cold, calculated use of extreme violence beggars belief," unquote. After the verdict, sources close to the murder inquiry said the teenager was born to kill. Supremely arrogant psychopath with total disregard for humanity.
That sounds like something in the Daily Mail for sure.
My favorite. That's a trashy magazine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Her father, Bola Adeola, disowned her, saying, quote, "Nobody is born evil, but what she did was evil. She is no longer my daughter. I don't even like her.
Wow.
I will never see her again and don't want her anywhere near me. I regret the day I ever met her mother. When I saw Mrs. Mandel's picture, I started crying. As a Christian, I can't believe anyone would do that, unquote.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So the reads for Cammy just keep coming.
Yeah.
That one from her dad is spicy and harsh, but yeah. Man. So he said that his daughter was a spoiled, cunning girl who had been obsessed with money from an early age. He blamed his daughter's obsession with money and material goods on her mother. Quote, "At first, I couldn't accept that somebody with my blood in her veins could do this to anyone, but then I saw the evidence. She should rot in hell," unquote. Dude, very harsh.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of get it, because we all hate her too.
Yeah.
But we're not related to her, and this is her father, and yeah. It kind of sounds like he was trying too hard to distance himself from her bad behavior.
Right.
And this is from our writer, Minnie. It seems like he's taking no responsibility for the effects of him leaving the family.
Right.
I mean, throwing money at a child is not the same as giving your heart and time and effort to raise them to be a contributing member of the community.
Yeah.
Hard to say, though, if she has some kind of mental health issues, then maybe nothing he did would have helped her become a better person anyway. But Minnie's feeling is he didn't really try that hard.
Yeah. And yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's more.
Oh.
He himself had served time in jail for cannabis smuggling and was once the subject of a BBC investigation into housing benefit fraud.
The BBC?
A friend of the family said, quote, "Kemi was born into a life of crime because of her father. He was convicted in 1989, 1 year after Kemi was born, for being the money man behind a big smuggling ring," unquote. So he's not innocent either.
He forgot to tell us that part. So the friend went on to say that Adeola's parents had been living in a big house with expensive cars, but they lost everything after he was convicted. And Adeola's mother had been very bitter about it. He said that it resulted in the loss of any kind of innocent childhood or needed stability for Adeola. Her father had rebuilt his fortune partly with rental fraud.
Yeah.
Is it really a fortune if it's built on fraud? After he served his time, but still refused to pay her school fees.
Yeah, he's a piece of work too.
Yes.
Adeola says that she loved her mother. Quote, "My mother always tried the best she could," unquote. But in a letter written in prison, she called her a, quote, "useless swine," unquote. Not nice, Adeola.
No,
not
is
nice.
Maybe it's some sort of code for "I love you, mom."
I'll have to remember to use that. Wendy, you useless swine.
Oh, she's so sweet.
Thank you.
It's just a code we use. It's no big deal.
Adeola was sentenced on June 28, 2006, with a recommendation that she serve at least 20 years behind bars.
During sentencing, Judge Richard Hone said, quote, "You are a remorseless and cold-blooded killer who is a danger to the public. I think you actually wanted to experience what it felt like to kill someone in cold blood, possibly so you could write about it, but more probably so you could boast about it and possibly even do it again. You are intelligent, manipulative, and skilled in deceit way beyond your years," unquote. Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
burn.
Let's get into Where Are They Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, sick burn. Where are they now? What do you got, Beth?
After Anne's murder, Leonard Mandel moved to Israel to live with his daughter. He described Anne as someone, quote, "whose life was taken up with kindness and giving up of herself to others. The unjust end she met, having so much taken away in such an undeserving manner, left us in total shock. Although nothing can bring Anne back to us, we sincerely hope that no one else will have to endure such a terrible experience," unquote.
In 2016, Adeola, then 28, tried to have her sentence reduced, claiming that she made, quote, "exceptional and unforeseen progress," unquote, during her time behind bars. But the judge, Mr. Justice Singh, said, quote, "there's clearly a lot of work still to be done. It is clear that not only was the victim targeted, both for financial gain and in order to experience an act of killing, but the victim had previously been kind to this applicant," unquote.
Yeah. Lawyers for Adeola said she had achieved all of her sentence planning targets. targets well in advance of her sentence expiring and held a position of trust within the prison, including being trusted to work with vulnerable fellow inmates. They also argued that any non-compliance with the prison regime should be considered in light of her being diagnosed with possible Asperger's syndrome.
Ooh, that's a twist.
Yeah.
However, a prison report, Mr. Justice Singh pointed to poor behavior, including deliberately stealing items from her peers and a long history of pushing boundaries. There was also evidence of prisoners being intimidated by her obsessive behavior towards them, and she has a history of abusing substances while in custody. Oh.
Another report said that she had completed a number of treatment goals and started an open university course, but she had, quote, not conducted herself in a manner that would indicate an exceptional progression in custody, unquote. Kemi Adeola is now 35 years old and still incarcerated. She won't be eligible for parole until 2026.
As an aside, quote, unquote, Mr. Justice is a form of address for a high court judge in the UK. Didn't know that. Mr. Justice Singh is Sir Rabindir Singh, the son of Indian immigrants and a Sikh, who wears a white turban on the bench, which I love.
Yeah.
So, do they still wear white wigs?
Yeah.
Oh.
But he wears a turban.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So in 2017, he reached one of the highest ranks achieved by a non-white judge in Britain when he was promoted to the Court of Appeal. Fantastic.
Very cool.
So now we're going to get into our takeaways. What are your thoughts, Beth?
Well, I will just say that I don't know exactly what caused Adeola to become this way, but that her appearance did not help.
Amen.
Yeah. Her dad is a piece of work.
Yeah.
He set an example of criminal behavior and was pretty much absent for her upbringing.
Yeah.
It sounds like her mom was a little flighty, but I don't know all the particulars, just that she burned through money and that she moved around a lot. So the children had no real place to call home and no real stability. And it's no wonder that Adeola acted out when she became a teenager. But she did the most.
She sure did.
Yeah. I know she dragged her sister Sade into her crimes, but I wonder how Sade's doing and how the other siblings are doing.
That's a really good question. Yeah, I wonder the same.
Speaking of which, this couple was only married for 4 years and produced 3 children during that time. So they had kids one right after the other, and then the dad took off. So mom was left to raise all these babies by herself. And it's no wonder she was bitter and might explain some of her flightiness. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I always say that raising kids is the hardest job on the planet. And here she was left with 3 babies to raise by herself. Oof.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oof. Yes. Oof. Ditto. Ditto. I agree. She did, in fact, do the most. I was thinking about, remember when she was doing like the scams and bragging about it?
Yeah.
You're right. I feel like that had to, it maybe inherited from her dad in some way.
This learned on
desire.
On Daddy's knee.
yeah. This desire to sort of get into that life.
Things, yeah.
Cunning is, I think, an underrated trait, especially in people who identify as female. I think being cunning is admirable.
Yeah.
But it's the cunning bitch who's in the C-suite, right? But another point is it's not unusual for teenagers or teenage girls to act out,
right.
But she really did the most.
Yeah.
And talking about this a little bit more, I wonder if she was a psychopath.
Yeah,
just
I don't
because
know.
Of her lack of empathy and
she planned the murder, like all the details. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, like she was building a grocery list.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then when she was in court. Just completely, I hate
unfazed.
How people say, unfazed. You're on trial for murder.
Yeah, and she's like,
and
la,
she
la,
was,
I'm texting
la,
people.
Yeah, look at my style. Woo, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think there were also more signs of her being dangerous. The killing the goldfish, terrorizing the neighbors.
Yeah.
Putting poop on the windows.
Yeah, that's nuts.
And I know that hurt people hurt people. And that kind of thing doesn't just start with Kemi. So I right. do agree that there's, you know, some family
there's
history,
more stuff
mom
going
and dad,
on, yeah.
there's more to it, but it she really did the most, which makes me think it might be, you know, her family history on top of something else going on that might rhyme with typopath. Anyway,
I thought you were going to say ACEism.
That said, I mean, if she is not a psychopath, there may have been an opportunity when she was acting out to sort of break the cycle of pain and trauma.
Yeah.
But if she was a psychopath, then I don't know if there was any hope anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, rest in peace, Miss Anne.
Yeah.
That is just, she was such a nice lady.
I know.
That's all I got. So now let's get into how not to get murdered. So if you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you. Don't poop on a plane with a diplomat.
This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. This is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's experiences.
So I found a safety tip on Instagram. Ooh. It is a doorstop alarm, and we've shouted out doorstop alarms before, but this one is not necessarily unusual, but it's really, it's different and it's super affordable. It stops the door from opening and has an alarm attached to it. And it's portable. You can take it anywhere.
Yeah. I looked at it. I saw this in the doc, and I Googled it and looked at it, and it's pretty cool. I had actually bought some of those doorstops before, but they didn't have alarms on them. So now I'm going to have to get one of these.
Right. Yeah. And it's portable. It can fit in your purse or in your backpack if you're going to college or on a trip or who knows.
Yeah.
There's a red lock that also you can get that goes around the doorknob.
Oh.
And it definitely, I mean, it's not, nothing's 100% safe or foolproof, but it right. definitely gives you time to get your gun and pepper spray or weapon
whatever.
Or get the hell out.
Yeah, whatever yeah. it is. Whatever yeah. your plan is. Yeah.
Whatever. So they're like $11.50 each. You can buy them in a multi-pack for multi-doors around your house. And we have a link that we will put in the show note.
Cool.
Yeah. Now it's shout-out time.
All right.
We shout out any content by or about people of color, any other marginalized folks, or any true crime goodies.
Okay.
And by the time this episode comes out, this movie will not be new, but Turning Red on Disney Plus.
Yeah, I saw an ad for that. Yeah, it looks cute.
It is fucking amazing. It's the best movie I've ever seen in my whole life.
Wow.
It's about this half Chinese girl in Toronto, Canada. And Toronto is like this wildly diverse city, uh-huh. right? And the representation is outstanding. It's about just this young girl who sort of lives, growing up, living in two worlds. She's got her immigrant, mom, and I think her white Canadian dad. And then she's also got this other world that she has to fit in at school with, people who are different than her. And like I said, the representation is outstanding. There's BIPOC representation. There's even a young person who appears to be gender nonconforming.
Oh.
I'm not 100% sure. But like I said, it's the greatest movie I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
There's even a Beyonce song in it. I watched it. My kids have seen it 3 times. And I watched it and I was like crying.
Aww.
I was like so happy to have watched this. It's so good.
Wow.
Also, one thing from Kimberly Ann, who is a fruity of ours, there's a podcast called The Red Justice Project. And it's about how true crime media often ignores the plight of missing and murdered Indigenous women. And these podcasters believe they can give families the dignity and respect that they deserve, even though they have not been given that from the media. So that is The Red Justice Project podcast.
Cool.
Thanks, Kimberly Ann.
Yeah.
What do you got, Beth?
Well, I want to recommend Worst Roommate Ever on Netflix.
Okay, tell me more. I've heard some people say some good things about it.
Yeah, it features stories about roommates who are a little wacky. And they have malevolent and sometimes violent intentions, and they turn the lives of their unsuspecting victims into real life nightmares. And all of the stories are fascinating, but the last one is a doozy. It's nuts.
My God, I'm going to go watch it as soon as we're done. Okay, so that is Turning Red on Disney Plus, The Red Justice Project wherever you get your podcasts, and Worst Roommate Ever on Netflix. Well, we did it. That's it for today. Where can the people find us, Beth?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all of our social media. Join our discussion group on Facebook at Fruit Loops Pod Discussion. If you want to support the show, you can send us a donation on the Cash App. Just Google Fruit Loops Pod Cash App, or you can become a monthly patron through Podbean. This will help us pay for things like our website and pod hosting. There's no minimum and no commitment. Even a dollar would help. And as always, we have merch for sale on our website.
Well, this is a weekly podcast, and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande, the host of True Crime Psychology and Personality. On my podcast, I explore and explain the pathology behind some of the most horrendous crimes and those who commit them. We discuss topics like narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, and antisocial personality disorder from a scientifically informed perspective. What is a narcissist? How do you spot a sociopath? What signs can you look for to protect yourself from these dangerous personalities? It's not just about the stories, but also the science and psychology behind them. So if you're interested in true crime or mental health, I'd encourage you to give my show a listen wherever you get podcasts.
From DNA testing to the Dixie Mafia, Crime Capsule brings you new stories of true crime in American history. I'm your host, Benjamin Morris. Join us for exclusive interviews with authors from Arcadia Publishing, writing the hottest books on the most chilling stories of our country's past. You can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts or on evergreenpodcasts.com. Crime Capsule. History so interesting, it's criminal.
Did you guys hear about that couple that went on vacation and one spouse murdered the other? In fact, the entire vacation was planned just so that they could make the murder look like an accident.
Ah, so like a slaycation.
Oh boy, sounds like a fun new true crime podcast to me.
On every episode of Slaycation, we'll examine true cases of people who were killed while on vacation.
Was it murder? Or just a horrible accident. That's up to you and the law to decide.
But either way, if you leave for your vacation in the plane and come home under the plane, you've definitely gone on a slaycation.
Join us every week for a fascinating new episode.
911, what's your emergency?
But make sure to pack your body bags,
because getting away can be murder.
This is Slaycation.
True terrors of horror, bizarre happenings, unexplainable events. On our podcast, Disturbed, terror takes center stage. Each episode is a journey into the darkest corners of human existence, delving into bone-chilling tales of kidnappings, serial killers, maniacs, and the very essence of your worst nightmares coming to life on this weekly true horror show. Disturbed is not for the faint of heart. It's an exploration of real, unadulterated horror sourced from everyday people. Each episode is a descent into the macabre, where we narrate stories that will leave you on the edge of your seat and crawling in your skin. We navigate the disturbing narratives that lurk in the shadows, offering a raw and unfiltered listen into the most terrifying aspects of the human experience. Enter at your own risk and let the unsettling tales unfold in the haunting realm of Disturbed. And remember, listeners, stay safe out there.